7:07. KFI AM 640, Bill Handel, sitting in for a Philly not-so-good Joe Crummy. This boy's a little ill, but he'll be back tomorrow night, regular time, 7 to 10 o'clock. Thursday and Friday, I'm sitting in for, what's his name? Tom Likas, that's who he is, from 3 to 7 o'clock, Saturday morning, 7 to 11 o'clock. Notice how I always plug my shows, without fail, absolutely, with no shame. So we've got a fairly interesting, very interesting, a fascinating show. I know everybody says that, oh, we got a great show for you tonight. But tonight, we've got a serious show. So if you think we're going to go crazy and we're going to talk about yard sales, we are not. Are we going to talk about cats dying? We are not. We've done that already on Tom's show. We're going to talk about a subject that is very, very serious, a subject that is on the minds of many, many people, including me more often than not. And tonight we're going to be talking about the Holocaust, but not just a discussion of the Holocaust. Tonight we're going to have two people here, one on the line and one in studio. First, before we get to the Mr. Breitbar, who is on the phone waiting for us, let me introduce who's going to come aboard about 7:20. Gentleman's name is Mark Weber. And Mark Weber is a member of the Editorial Advisory Committee of the Institute for Historical Review. Basically, his contention is, and I'll introduce him a little bit more later, is that the Holocaust never really existed, that the Holocaust is a PR scam devised by Jews for whatever reason. We'll find out later what the contention is, and that many of the contentions that are made up by the Jewish community simply don't exist, that it is all a figment of one's imagination. And we have on the line Aaron Breitbar of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, senior researcher of the Simon Wiesenthal Center. Aaron, are you on the line?
Good evening. How are you?
Good evening. Thank you aboard. Before we go on, I want to make it very clear that what Mark Weber did, in fact, Aaron, want to debate you, and you elected not to appear on the same show with Mr. Weber, and I would like to ask you why.
Basically, because we choose not to dignify the types of thoughts and those who espouse them, and for that reason, we have a very strong policy that if anybody asks us questions before, we will answer them. If anybody asks us questions afterwards, we will answer them. But we will not go on with these people for the same reason that Jonas Salk will not go on with a voodoo witch doctor to discuss the causes of infantile paralysis or polio. It only dignifies people and theories who do not deserve it.
All right, but the reality is that the revisionists have gotten more and more press because we are a free society, because these kinds of radio shows obviously enjoy having this kind of controversy on, it's going to happen more and more. I'm not making a judgment here, and I accept the fact that you don't want to appear. So let me do this. Let's spend the next 10 or 15 minutes with you, if you would. You know more about the contentions of Mark Weber than I do. I'm sure you know him very well. Let's spend a few minutes, if you would, telling me. Before I do that, let me ask you what you would like to say, knowing he's going to spend a good hour and a half with us here, and you're not going to be here to refute the contentions that he is going to argue.
Well, you know, it's a very long story, but the fact is, as long as there are people in the world that are ready to listen to Men from Mars stories, there'll be people equally as ready to tell them. The fact, however, is that I believe these individuals to have a much more pernicious agenda. As far as I'm concerned, they are tailoring anti-Semitism to fit the times. There was a time where people believed that Jews used blood for Passover. Then Hitler came along with the theory, having to doctor it to fit modern times, that the Jews were trying to poison the genetic pool of German and European blood. And now you have a group of people who basically say the Jews are liars, despite all the proof of the Holocaust and the various people that have been involved either as participants, as victims, the jurists, the newspaper people, what have you. Despite all of that proof, They say that the Holocaust is basically a myth manufactured by Jews for the support of a Jewish state, which would not have existed without it, and that this Jewish state has its gold expansion, and it's almost the Jewish conspiracy theory. The Jews are trying to take over the world, but it's tailored for modern times. Bigotry comes in 57 varieties, just like Heinz, and this is just one of the newer ones. What these individuals, I believe, are trying to do is to rehabilitate Nazism and other extremist right-wing ideologies so that 50 years after the event, when memories are dulled, people will one day believe that maybe the Nazis really didn't do all that people said about them. Maybe the Nazis were just another political party who simply made the trains run on time. Yeah. And I believe that if we are not careful and take to heart the lessons of history, there is a danger, of course, of repeating them. And that is precisely what these individuals are looking for. They were not able to go around in the 40s and in the 50s and say this thing never happened. There were just too many people around who saw it happen. But 60% of the world's population was born after the war, and in a society where half the high school students in this country cannot identify where New York State is, they are hoping that people will find these stories too difficult to be believed, and by the same token that they will be so uninformed that it'll be easy to take facts that seem like facts to twist them around. One of the most obvious, for example, and I'm sure Mr. Weber will try to bring it up, is the fact that recently the Polish government at the Auschwitz Memorial in Poland downgraded the figures of those who were murdered there from 4 million to a little bit over 1 million, and they'll say, aha, they're finally giving in little by little. But what they will not want to tell you is the fact that the 4 million figure was never accepted by the majority of historians. If you take a look at the Encyclopedia Judaica, published in 1971, before there was an Institute for Historical Review, etc., they will tell you that the lower estimates are the more correct ones. They will talk about gas chambers. Were there gas chambers in Dachau or not? The fact of the matter is there were gas chambers at Dachau. They were operational, except for the fact that there was a very strong resistance in the camp, which constantly sabotaged them, which is true, by the way, for Buchenwald. And they will try to get people who may not know exactly what happened. They will bring up a report, for example, known as the Leuchter Report, a report of an individual who, by the way, is in trouble with the law right now, who basically went to the Auschwitz camp and the Majdanek camp and tried to prove, because there was not that much Cyclone B, the gas that was used there, that he could find some 45 years after the event, that proved that it could not have been used to kill people. And yet, at the trial in which he gave this testimony, he was ripped apart by the prosecution. That was the Zundel case in Canada.
Yeah, let me ask you, can I call you Aaron?
That's fine.
Are you have any religious background? Are you a rabbi?
No, I'm not.
Good. So that makes me feel better. I can call you Aaron. Aaron, one of the contentions of his organization is that, of course, there was no mention by Hitler or any of the hierarchy about the actual extermination of the Jews. And if memory serves me, and I am not a Holocaust expert nor a historian, the Wannsee Conference of the early 40s, did it not specifically talk about the extermination of the Jews?
January 20th, 1942, a Gross Wannsee of Berlin, that is absolutely correct.
And the term extermination of the Jews was used during that conference, was it not?
In the conference it was. Now, one has to understand, however, that they had to be very careful. For example, they said that Jews will no longer be allowed to emigrate. Instead, they are going to be evacuated. Now, obviously, if the purpose of the Nazis, the point of the Nazis was to get the Jews out of Europe, they would have been happy to let them go wherever they wanted, which, of course, was the original plan. However, we do know that the word evacuate means killing. Why? Because the term evacuering was used at a mental hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was evacuering then meant the killing of the mental patients, which is another fact that I would like to bring out for just a moment. The first people murdered en masse by the Nazis were not Jews. They were German mental patients, people that were considered unworthy of life because either they were mentally infirm or physically infirm, they were crippled. At least 100,000 of these people were murdered, were so-called euthanized, and I hate that word, but they were murdered at places like Hadamar, Hartheim, Brandenburg, Grafenegg, Sonnenstein, etc. The point is that the people who manned those stations were the ones who eventually taught others and who themselves were involved in the places like Majdanek, Sobibor, Auschwitz-Birkenau. So this Holocaust is not simply a Jewish question. It's a question of humanity. There were millions of other people that were murdered because they were considered not to be worthy of life. And there were many people who risked their lives and very often gave them, whether they were in Eastern Europe or in Germany or countries in Western Europe, because they could not see man, could not sit down while man was being inhuman to his fellow man. So this is an issue that is extremely important, not only to Jews, but to the world at large, because the Jews were not the first people ever targeted. We had the Armenians in 1915. In Cambodia, some 2.5 million people were murdered in the 70s by Pol Pot. And so this is an issue that we as human beings, forget Jew, Gentile, German, Russian, whatever you have, that's something that we as human beings must contend with, because man has been inhumane to his fellow man, and we must never let this happen again. That's why this center was constructed, not simply to memorialize the victims of the Holocaust, as good a purpose as that may be, but to work to educate the public and to see that social action is accomplished, to see that inhumanity, violation of rights, regardless of who the victim is, who the perpetrator is, cannot go on. It must stop.
You know, we're going to have to obviously let you go, because I understand you're gone at 7:20. We have to take a break. But if anybody wants to get hold of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, it's a Holocaust Study Center, correct?
Among other things.
And a museum and a school, I believe.
The school is a separate organization.
Okay. How do we get hold of you?
We're at 9760 West Pico Boulevard. That's in Los Angeles, California, 90035.
And what's the phone number there?
Area code 213-553-9036.
9036. And if anybody wants information on the Holocaust, and certainly the historical viewpoint as the Simon Wiesenthal Center establishes, they simply can call 553-9036, 213 area code, right?
That's correct.
I thank you very much, Aaron. Thank you. And now, kick back, and you're going to, I hope, see a rather fascinating debate going on. Thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
That was Aaron Breitbar, who would not debate Mark Weber, who will be with us momentarily, talking about the Holocaust. Did it exist? Did it not? As he, a revisionist, contends that it did not exist. This is Bill Handel. It's KFI AM 640. I'm sitting in for Joe Crummy, who is not feeling well tonight. Let's go to Ken Gallagher in the KFI Traffic Center and see what's going on. Ken. Here at KFI AM 640. Welcome back. We just had on the line Aaron Breitbart, senior researcher from the Simon Wiesenthal Center. Hard to say. Simon Wiesenthal Center. And he would not debate the gentleman who is with us, Mark Weber, director of the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust and on the Editorial Advisory Committee, and is an Editorial Advisory Committee member for the Institute of Historical Review, basically a revisionist organization that argues that the Holocaust really didn't exist. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hold on a second. We got it. We heard you. Okay, thank you. And sitting next to Mark is Ted O'Keefe, who is editor of the Journal of Historical Review. Welcome to the show, Ted.
Thanks.
Okay, you know, I'm not hearing them through the headsets, so something is going on here. Let's try that now. Hello?
Hello.
Hello? I'm still not hearing you through the headsets. Okay. What I'm going to do is introduce everybody while we figure out what's going on. Also, I'm hearing you folks through the headsets. Hang on a second while we figure this out. Julie, I'm hearing you through the headsets, but I'm not hearing them through the headsets.
Do you hear me?
I am now hearing you through the headsets. That was Mark. Julie, you may want to keep the cursing to a limit, limited amount, because you're on the air. And Ted, will you say something?
This is Ted.
Okay, we're fine. All right, we're fine. Are we okay there? Good. All right, we're back on. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. Well, I assume you have, and I'm going to start with you, Mark. You've been up against the Simon Wiesenthal Center before, and their contention is that this is, your position is so ludicrous that it's basically the Flat Earth Society, Men from Mars type of thing. You move the microphone right in front of you, if you would, please. You are very serious about the fact the Holocaust didn't exist.
Well, Bill, I think it's inaccurate to use that kind of term. And early on, you characterized that our position is that we say the Holocaust is a figment of the imagination. That's not correct at all.
Okay.
There's no question, and nobody disputes the fact that millions of Jews were uprooted from their homes in Europe, that they were deprived of their rights, they were treated very cruelly, they were deported en masse to concentration camps and ghettos in the East, where many of them died under often terrible overcrowding. There's no question that at least hundreds of thousands of Jews died during the Second World War. Many Jews were killed. But we say, and when I say we, I mean Holocaust revisionists. Holocaust revisionism is a growing field movement, whatever you want to say. It's characterized by Professor Robert Forreston of the University of Lyon in France, Dr. Arthur Butts of the Northwestern University, the best-selling British historian David Irving, and even Dr. Arno Meyer, professor of history at Princeton University. What we say are three things. First, there was no plan or program by the German government during the Second World War to exterminate the Jews of Europe. That does not mean, as I say, that many Jews didn't die. It doesn't mean that many Jews were not even killed in various circumstances. Second, we say that the figure of 6 million Jewish dead during the war is an irresponsible exaggeration. It's in fact not supported anymore by responsible historians, no matter what their view of this subject. And third, we say that stories of mass extermination in gas chambers are mythical. Now, let's get down to some specifics. Mr. Breitbart said, for example, that we would make the point, I mean, he made the point that the figure held for many years of 4 million Auschwitz dead has been reduced, as it were, officially to 1 million. And he contended that no historian ever really supported the 1 million figure. Well, Rabbi Marvin Heyer of the Simon Wiesenthal Center himself, about a year ago on a program, claimed 4 million were killed at Auschwitz, 2.5 million of those were Jews. Okay. No responsible historian now accepts that figure.
Let me ask you, let's assume that it's 1 million, okay? I mean, well, do you accept that 1 million were killed at Auschwitz?
No, in fact, 1 million figure that's now talked about is a figure of how many are estimated to have died at Auschwitz.
To have been at Auschwitz, not to have died.
Okay, well, anyway.
That was Ted, by the way, O'Keefe.
Yeah.
Right. But the point is this, the important point is this, that the Auschwitz 4 million figure isn't something that just was just in the air. It was certified at the main Auschwitz, main Nuremberg trial of 1945-46. It's been repeated countless times in numerous history books, newspaper articles, and by spokesmen, even including from the Simon Wiesenthal Center. And the important thing is that this 4 million figure had was supported by a whole lot of so-called documentation, eyewitnesses, and so forth, and that evidence, Mr. Breitbart implicitly concedes, is no good. Now, he went on to talk about how we would say that no one was gassed at Dachau and Buchenwald and other camps in Germany proper. What's important to realize is that the main Nuremberg trial and at many other trials and so forth, it was claimed seriously the masses of people were exterminated in gas chambers at Dachau, Buchenwald, Sachsenhausen, and other camps in Germany proper. That part of the Holocaust extermination story is now conceded to be so untenable that has been eliminated. And Mr. Breitbart, in his sort of roundabout way, conceded that. But what's the important thing is that the evidence supposedly that was presented for these supposed gassings at Dachau and so forth, he implicitly acknowledges to have been worthless. That is, eyewitnesses, court testimony, documentation, and so forth. For gassings at Dachau, he concedes implicitly are not true.
Well, no, I don't think he did that. I think what he said was that there were gassings at Dachau.
No, he said there were gas chambers, but that the resistance was so powerful they were able to prevent them.
No. He didn't say that. He said that there were nearly as many. And that's what I remember, and there was a lot of opposition within the camp, but there were gassings that were going on. The problem is I'm at a disadvantage here because I don't have the information to debate you, as does the Simon Wiesenthal Center,
sure.
And I'm almost, upsetting here.
Bill, whatever the situation, there's now no question, no one was ever gassed at Dachau. That is now firmly established.
But they had gas chambers at Dachau.
Wait a minute.
We didn't see those gas chambers at Dachau?
Wait a minute. We're talking oftentimes about two different things. There are, when you go to Dachau today, there's a crematory facility there. There's a room that is presented to the public at saying that this was at one time a gas chamber, but no one was ever gassed there. Now, we can go into various reasons, which I might go into later, why that wasn't. But nearby are very small rooms, very small chambers, which were in fact gas chambers. They were used for gassing clothes. They were disinfection gas chambers using Zyklon B. One of the famous pictures of the door, a famous picture of the door of one of these chambers has been widely reproduced as the door of an alleged extermination gas chamber. That's false. Oftentimes, much of the confusion arises out of the fact that there's a confusion between real gas chambers that were in fact used. There were hundreds of them throughout Europe during the Second World War, used to disinfect clothes using Zyklon B. Zyklon B was a very common disinfectant.
You know what? We're going to take a break because we have to take a traffic break. We're going to come back and we're going to discuss the issue of whether in fact there were these gassings or not. We're discussing the Holocaust with two revisionists, and I assume that that's not pejorative as far as you're concerned. You accept those terms, right? With two Holocaust revisionists, Ted O'Keefe, the editor of the Journal of Historical Review, Mark Weber, director of the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust. This is KFI AM 640. My name is Bill Handel, sitting in for Joe Crummy. We're going to come back a few minutes more, and then we're going to take your phone calls here on KFI on whether the Holocaust actually existed, did it not, are the revisionists, are they making any kind of a case at all? Let's go to Ken Gallagher in the KFI News Center and see what's going on. Ken. We're back at 7:34, KFI AM 640. Bill Handel sitting in for Joe Crummy. Our guest this evening, Mark Weber, Director, Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust. Ted O'Keefe, editor of the Journal Historical Review, both Holocaust revisionists. We're trying to get the terms here, gentlemen. Are we saying that the Holocaust as we know it did or did not exist? Before we do, let me give you some phone numbers if you want to call in and join this conversation. If you would like to join us, let me give you the numbers in the 714-619 area code, 1-800-553-4640, in the 213-818 area code, 5201-KFI. We haven't given the numbers out, but I'll tell you the lines are already jammed. As you can imagine, this is a very, very controversial issue. I have not yet brought out, gentlemen, and I want to know, and I've sort of left it for the half hour, I am Jewish. Mm-hmm. My grandparents were killed in the Holocaust. I don't have grandparents because they were exterminated by the Ustashi, the Yugoslav Nazis. My father today spent 4 hours at the Simon Wiesenthal Center, coincidentally, by the way, 4 hours in front of a videotape camera explaining his experience at the Jasenovich concentration camp where he witnessed fellow Jews being slaughtered. Now, you may say it doesn't exist, but my dad ain't a liar. He was there. He saw it.
Yeah.
Okay, he saw people being shot, killed, men, women, and children lined up against walls and shot because they were Jews. And to say that didn't happen doesn't make much sense. But my understanding is you're not arguing that people were not killed that way. You're just arguing the numbers here. Am I correct, Ted? Or is the whole thing a figment?
I think the Jasenovac concentration camp in what is now Yugoslavia is a good case in point because the current president of the Croatian Republic of Yugoslavia, a former communist and an Asturian, has authoritatively demonstrated that the figures for deaths in Jasenovac have been exaggerated by 7 to 10-fold.
I have a question.
Okay.
That doesn't make any sense. There were, I think, 75 or 90,000 Jews in Yugoslavia. 95% didn't make it through the war.
You say
they didn't make it. They didn't make it. They all died, Ted.
But how do you know they all died?
Because none of them are around.
Where did they go? Bill. First of all,
your father came to this country from Yugoslavia.
Yeah, he was one of the 10% who survived. But how about his uncles, his parents, his cousins? Out of the family of hundreds, there were three or four that made it just out of my family. How about the other families who lost hundreds? Go ahead.
One of the most interesting features when talking about the Holocaust is you ask an average American how many Jews died during the Second World War.
Right.
How many were killed? Everybody says 6 million.
Right.
Everybody's heard this figure. If you ask a person how many Americans died during the Second World War, how many Russians died during the Second
right.
War, how many Germans died during the most people have not a clue of an idea.
I do. I'll tell you.
Now, wait a minute. Most people don't have a clue of an idea. Now.
Right.
At the end of the Second World War, the last years and just after the Second World War, something like 14 million Germans were expelled or fled from what was then Eastern Germany and Eastern European provinces into Germany at the end of the war. Something like 2 million Germans died during that process. It was a terrible thing, an awful thing, but nobody contends that that was not a policy to exterminate the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
Whether people are killed or massacres that take place, that is not the same as a policy to exterminate people. And that our contention is that there is no evidence of a German policy or program during the Second World War to exterminate the Jews of Europe. There's not only no documentary evidence of that, there's no evidence whatsoever. And the evidence that does exist, documents, memoirs, and so on and so forth, confirm that the German policy was to expel the Jews to the east, albeit under very horrendous circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And many died, many were shot. But that's not the same as a policy to exterminate the Jews of Europe. I want to give one of the most important pieces of evidence for the Auschwitz extermination story, confining just to Auschwitz, is a so-called memoir of Auschwitz Commandant Rudolf Höss, H-O-E-S-S. This memoir and the so-called confessions of Rudolf Höss have now been shown to be fraudulent. He was tortured at the end of the war by the British. He claimed that 2.5 million or 3 million people were exterminated under his command at Auschwitz during the Second World War. No serious historian now accepts that figure. That's out. And the important thing, I want to get back to this earlier before, is that Mr. Breitbart, in his earlier thing, was trying to anticipate some of the points that we might make.
Mm-hmm.
But the important thing is that in his statements, he implicitly repudiates a mountain of documents, so-called documents, eyewitnesses, and so forth for claims that were made seriously at the end of the war. For example, it was seriously claimed during the war and after the war and at the Nuremberg trials that the Germans manufactured soap bars of soap, mm-hmm. for the bodies of murdered Jews. It's a story that had a lot of circulation at one time. No serious historian now. It's accepted. It's a myth. It's a propaganda story from the Second World War.
You know, I have seen photographs taken by the Allies.
Oh.
I have seen photographs of thousands of Jews in line marching into chambers and no one coming out the other end.
No. Maybe you've seen pictures of crowds of Jews. There is no pictures of gassings of people. There are no pictures of lines of people marching into a gas chamber.
These were identified by U.S. Army intelligence as gas chambers.
Wait a minute.
They were identified by our forces.
The only picture. I mean, I know there's one famous photograph, as far as I know, only one by an American Army photographer of a gas chamber. It was taken at Auschwitz on Liberation Day, April 1945.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a photograph of Auschwitz taken from the air during reconnaissance.
Oh, very good.
Right?
Very good. Excellent. Excellent point.
And we are talking...
Aerial photographs were made public by the CIA in 1979. They were aerial photographs taken by the Allies during 1944, during the height of the alleged extermination period at Auschwitz. There is nothing in the photographs themselves that shows any evidence of masses of bodies, gas chamber, anything. What happened was that captions have been added to these photos to say this was a gas chamber, this was such and such, and this was so and so. There is,
when you're at 20,000 feet or 15,000 feet and you're taking aerial photographs, there is nothing that says this is an armaments factory. There is nothing that says this building is barracks, this building houses military supplies. But intelligence knows where gas chambers were.
In fact, during the war, no American official, no Allied official saw fit to say that those photographs show that anyone was gassed at Auschwitz.
Those labels were put on 30 years later.
In fact, what is important about those photographs is that they are not consistent with numerous stories of flames shooting up from crematories, piles of bodies being ready to be disposed of,
large numbers of people.
The photographs are not consistent with the Holocaust extermination story as we have heard it for 40 years. That's the important thing of those photographs.
Where did all the people go when they were brought in cattle cars in Auschwitz? Did those people don't exist?
We were told up to a year ago that there were 4 million people brought to Auschwitz and killed.
I don't know the figure. Let's accept your figure.
That shrunk down
Ted,
by the 3 million.
Fine.
Where did those three million go?
Let's accept your figure of 1 million. All right, assuming that you're correct, and I don't know. I don't know that for a fact. Assuming you're correct, where did 1 million people go? Because at the end of the war, there were only tens of thousands left at Auschwitz. Where did 1 million people go?
Oh, do you want me to do that?
Please, answer.
Many people died at Auschwitz. There were several typhus epidemics at Auschwitz. One of the reasons that, in fact, there were crematory buildings there was because of the very high death rate. The large buildings, four large buildings, were constructed in Auschwitz-Birkenau, which is alleged to be the great extermination center, in early 1943. No, 1943, not 1942, 1943. These buildings are alleged to be the extermination gas chambers. We now know that these buildings were, in fact, these crematories were built in response to a typhus epidemic in 1942. Conditions in Auschwitz, especially Auschwitz-Birkenau, were absolutely horrendous. Many people died there, particularly of typhus, particularly of diseases. That's a cruel thing, it's a terrible thing, and so forth, but it is not an extermination program.
The story of extermination started to come out in 1940, 1941. Let me tell you, I know this because I know people who were involved when there was a movement begging the Allies to bomb the railroad lines to save the Jews, and the Allies refused to do it because it simply wasn't of importance strategically to stop those railroad cars. Why would they come up with those stories in 1941 and not after the war?
Very important point. No, actually, the extermination stories for Auschwitz began really of Auschwitz in 1944. The stories of extermination in general were 1942. The important thing is that the Allies refused to acquiesce to these demands because the Allied officials responsible for Jewish affairs in Europe during the Second War did not accept privately those stories. That's a very important point.
They didn't.
There was discussions and, in fact, objections to the propaganda that was being put out at that time.
We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go to your phone calls. We're speaking to Mark Weber, Director of the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust, Ted O'Keefe, Editor, Journal of Historical Review, Holocaust Revisionists. This is Bill Handel sitting in for Joe Crummy. We'll be back right after this. And we're coming back to the phone calls here at KFI, and we're discussing the Holocaust with two Holocaust revisionists, Ted O'Keefe and Mark Weber. Let's go to the phones. Jill, first-time caller from Valencia. You're on KFI. Good afternoon or good evening, Jill.
Hi. Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am.
All right. I don't want to debate these guys, because I really think they're off the wall, and it's kind of really scary what they're saying. But I just want to say that my family was killed over there, too. They did not die of any diseases. They were killed, my whole family.
By whom?
Excuse me?
Where specifically, Jill?
I don't know where specifically they were killed, but I know they were killed, and they had numbers, and they were taken into camps, and they were killed. And the only one that came out alive was my father. Now, the first time I've heard someone come and tell me that the Holocaust didn't exist happened to be 4 years ago, and I was in shock, and I did check it out, okay? And I found out that the 6 million figure is really not accurate. The truth is it was probably double the amount of Jews that were killed, if not more. Sure, there is no documentation because everything was burned and everything was destroyed. Of course, they're not going to go and advertise, "Hi, guys, I'm going to kill 6 million Jews today. I'm going to kill 5 today. Here, let the world know," in headlines. Of course not. That's why there's no evidence that way.
Yeah, you know
but
what?
The evidence is there, okay? And there's a big monument in Israel, in New York, and in a lot of places in the world. There's evidence, there's pictures, and there is numbers, okay? For someone to say that the Holocaust didn't exist and they just didn't get killed, they died from diseases, why don't you come around and say, well, there was no slavery in the United States, all right? The slaves are just a figment of someone's imagination, because now Black people are coming out and saying that they want a state too, and they want to get some money for all the hardship that they suffered. So slavery never existed.
Yeah.
I mean, when time passes by and things disappear and there's no headlines to prove something, of course you can say anything you want.
Right.
And it's really scary for someone to come out and take history the way it happened.
Jill,
when millions of people suffered. Never mind the ones that were killed. I think the ones that were killed were lucky, because the ones that weren't killed were really the ones that suffered, like little children, and come out and say, that never happened. They weren't killed. They just died from diseases. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. And the scary thing about it is that people like you that say things like that, there were people out there, they don't know what happened, and they think it's true. Oh, yeah, that's right. Just weren't killed there. It was just maybe a million. Well, maybe they believe it's a million or 2 million, and that's not the point. The point is there were more than 6 million.
All right, Jill, thanks for the call. You guys want to respond?
Well, it's difficult to respond to that, but, I mean, it's what she said. Well, I suppose there's numerous things to be said. First of all, I mean, she says not 6 million, but double
12,
that, 12
right.
million. I mean, that's ridiculous. No historian now accepts, really, the 6 million figure is
Let me ask you something. Here's a question that I have, okay? And one of the things about the Germans and the way they did things is they're pretty meticulous people. I mean, we know that. And the story, and one thing I disagree with Jill is that she says that people don't talk about how many people were killed, and that, but they didn't keep records. They did.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there were records coming out of Auschwitz and other camps of the numbers of the thousands coming in, and there was one day in which 3,000 or 4,000 died of heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or heart attacks. 3,000 or 4,000 in one day died of heart attacks.
Well, I think we're talking about two different things. I mean, if we're going to talk about official German records...
I'm talking about official German records.
No, okay, right. You mentioned earlier, for example, the Bonsai Conference
document.
Yes, the That's very important. It's a 16-page document. It's part of the Nuremberg record and so. In fact, Breitbart was not very explicit on this point, but in fact, there's no mention of extermination in the document. More importantly, not only is there no mention of extermination...
But they do mention the final solution, certainly.
That term is used time and time again. Very important. Bill, there was a German policy called the final solution. The final solution policy was spelled out in German documents during the war. But the final solution policy was also spelled out not as a policy of extermination.
Let me ask you something. I think they were somewhat careful. I mean, for historical purposes, we know that if you read Mein Kampf, for example, Hitler talks about getting rid of, wiping out, doing away with. He uses many euphemisms for not having Jews around.
I wouldn't say those are euphemisms.
Mein Kampf contains no reference to or even an allusion to exterminating Jews.
And I wish I had a copy of Mein Kampf right here, because I think you'd have a difficult time.
Well, in fact, Bill, that's a very common misnomer, that Mein Kampf has this blueprint supposedly for exterminating the Jews. It's completely untrue. And as Mr. Breitbart mentioned earlier on in the program, in fact, after Hitler took power, his policy was to encourage Jews to leave Europe. Much of the problem, in fact, was that other countries wouldn't take Jews.
That's true.
But
I have to tell you, in the countries the Germans did take over, and for example, certainly the Balkan countries, the East European countries, where the Ustashi, for example, and my experience and my knowledge is with Yugoslavia because of my father and the studies that I've made, Jasenovic camp. I know that once the Germans had already invaded 1942, you couldn't get out. Jews could not get out. Thank you. It's over. Goodbye. You could not leave the country.
Well, one thing, Bill, you're touching on is that the policy toward the Jews in various countries in Europe during the Second World War, which were part of the Axis alliance, including Croatia under the Ustashi, varied from place to place. The Ustashi was a much more anti-Jewish.
Oh, they were nuts.
Ruthlessly.
You know what? Let me take some calls. We got people that are just dying to talk to us, and it's my fault for talking too much. Conrad, first-time caller from Upland. You're on KFI.
Yes, sir. I've been listening now for decades and decades of this load of baloney that the Holocaust didn't happen. I was a member of the 14th Armored Division on detached service to the American Red Cross, and I was there. I was a soldier, but I was in the shower room. I was in the Jeep that was up on blocks on the rear wheels with the hose attached to one shower sprinkler inside the shower sprinkler, and I was inside of it. There were no dead bodies there at the time, but it was pretty close.
Where were you, sir?
I was in Dachau.
Okay. It's true that at the end of the war, many people claim that people were gassed at Dachau at the end of the war. It's now, no serious historian, when you go to Auschwitz today, no one seriously claims that anyone was gassed at Dachau. This was a story that was widely propagated. Look, ask yourself, if the Germans had actually been gassing people at Dachau, do you think that they would leave in existence an extermination chamber for gassing people for the Americans to find when they come? It's ridiculous.
Excuse me. I spent a considerable amount of time there, and I talked to the prisoners that were still there, and their thighs were about as fat as my wrist. They had been there.
Sir.
I asked them what happened to the ashes of all the people.
Mm-hmm.
They told me they were spread on surrounding farms.
Conrad?
All their boots and their hair and anything else that you could take from a dead body were in sheds.
All right, Conrad, we're going to take a break, but I want you to hang on, okay?
Okay.
And we're back at KFI AM 640, Bill Handel, and the subject is the Holocaust, and did it exist as the Jewish people say it did? Our guests are Ted O'Keefe, editor of the Journal Historical Review, and Mark Weber, director for Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust. revisionists, those that say the Holocaust did not exist as public perception claims that it has. We had on the line Conrad, who, back on the phone. Hello, Conrad, you're back.
Yes.
Let me reintroduce you. Conrad was at Dachau at the end of the war with the American forces, and you claim, or you say, and you saw gas chambers at Dachau, right, Conrad?
Yes, sir, I was in it.
You were in a gas chamber at Dachau.
Yes, sir.
All right, and I think Mark and or Ted had a response.
Yes, Conrad. Number one, isn't it odd that the United States, which had a Judge Advocate General's Corps and a War Crimes Division with its legal corps, did not carry out and publish a forensic report on any such gas chamber in Dachau? Number two, in fact, the United States military had a forensic pathologist, Dr. Charles Larson, who performed several thousand autopsies on concentration camp victims in the Americas area, from Buchenwald, Dachau, so forth. He did not find a single case of poisoning through gas. Revisionists concede, we don't make excuses for, we concede that thousands and tens of thousands of inmates of the concentration camps, particularly in the last months of the war, died of typhus,
starvation,
other diseases.
Yeah, how about all these people who saw the gassings, who saw the capos, the people who took the bodies out of the gas chambers?
Is
that all stories of thousands of people?
It's very important to know exactly what we're dealing with here. The number of people who say they actually saw gassings is very, very small. One of the most famous of these men, Rudolf Verba, who was a co-author of the so-called Auschwitz Protocol, who has written a book entitled I Cannot Forgive, testified against revisionists in Toronto. He had to concede at the end of his testimony that much of his book and much of his testimony and much of his statements over the year had been poetic license, had been fiction. He claimed personally to have witnessed the gassings of something like 2 million people at Auschwitz. No, as Mr. Breitbart said earlier, no serious historian accepts that anymore. It's very, when one tries, as I have tried to do and others have tried to do, to pin down these witnesses, well, what exactly did you see? Not what you heard from other people, what exactly did you see? These stories break down under close examination.
Conrad, we have 1 minute to go. Do you want to comment here?
Well, I tell you,
You have to speak up a bit, please.
All over Germany. I fought through Rhineland and Central Europe. And during that time, we freed a Frauenlager, a woman's jail. I've watched reburials of dead from mass graves where they propped up the four dead bodies half-eaten in caskets, and they made the people in the German town with their children walk through and have to observe them. I was in there myself. And as far as the gas chamber, I guarantee you, I saw the gas chamber, I saw the Jeep that made the gas, that the Volkswagen that was on blocks, and it was attached to the piping going in the building, and the whole building was very thick asbestos. I even know how the damn place was built. And I was in it all alone, and it was a pretty big building, and I said to myself, I wonder how many poor souls lost their life in here.
Right. Conrad, thank you.
I went out, put my hands in the barrels of ashes, and believe me, it wasn't from a fireplace.
Conrad,
it was from the ovens.
Thanks very much for the call. For those of you that are on hold, Jeff, Nancy, David, Joyce, we're taking a break right now. We will be back to your phone calls. We want them. They're important. We're speaking to Mark Weber and Ted O'Keefe, revisionists, Holocaust revisionists. This is Bill Handel, KFI AM 640. Let's go to the News Center with Ken Gallagher. We'll be back after this at KFI Los Angeles.
Mr. Weber, you're an idiot. And the only reason you got on this program is because you're controversial, because just listening to you talk for a minute shows that you're not very intelligent, you manipulate the facts, and I know something about concentration camps because I am Japanese-American, and I was in one during World War II, and you're probably going to say that didn't happen.
Where's the gas chamber?
It doesn't have to be a gas chamber. I personally looked it up in the dictionary, and to incarcerate persons... because they're a certain group, that's enough to call that a concentration camp.
Nancy, I don't think they're denying there were concentration camps.
No, in fact, Nancy, I've written an article about the West Coast incarceration of Japanese Americans during the Second World War. There were many similarities, in fact, although certainly nowhere near the brutality or the harshness of between the rounding up of Japanese Americans on the West Coast and the rounding up and incarceration of Jews in Europe during the Second World War.
Yes, I'm just trying to make a point. I have seen films of these mass graves. I've seen heads decapitated. I have seen arms and legs. I have seen films of this.
Terrific. Nancy, as a matter of fact, let me cut you off because I want to continue that thought, and thank you very much. Let's talk about the films that came out of World War II, the documentary films of the mass graves, of the Cyclone B being dropped in,
of the
piles of bodies
sitting in the
gas chamber.
In the final months of the war, as the Soviets approached from the east, the Germans moved hundreds of thousands of Jews from concentration camps and remaining ghettos in the east into the remaining German camps in central and western Germany. The camps that were remaining in western central Germany became horribly overcrowded, absolutely stuffed with people. And under these circumstances, especially with the vast movement of people during that period of time, there was a great deal of death in these camps by starvation and disease. There's no secret about that. Everyone knows about that.
How about the photographs of inside the gas chamber that I have seen of hundreds of bodies piled up towards the middle? I mean, were these doctored? Were these manufactured?
There are no photographs of bodies of gassed people.
I have not seen those?
No. You might have seen photographs of bodies. And there's no question. I mean, many people died in these camps. In fact, if there had been a German policy to exterminate the Jews of Europe during the Second World War, the masses of people that were found in the Western camps at the end of the war would have long since been killed. Wouldn't have been there.
And maybe my memory is going here, but I distinctly remember seeing photographs of a large room.
Please stop your machine at this point and